Good morning. You may proceed. As Chief Justice said, Chief Judge Moore from the Court of Appeals is sitting, as is Judge Reedman from the Court of Appeals. So you may proceed.
I'm Bruce Caton, and I'm not an attorney. I was released from prison in October of 2013 after serving 10 full years.
Let me ask you, as my understanding, you are now out on parole, is that correct?
Yes.
And were you ever reincarcerated when you were brought back, or were you released on parole?
No, I was completely released, discharged. Okay. My rights were restored then, or at least I thought so.
I think what you were being asked is when you were rearrested, were you ever put in jail or sent back to the prison, or were you immediately placed on parole?
No, I was sent back to state penitentiary for
90 days?
81 days. Mm.
So what kind of relief do you want, Mr. Canton? What can we do for you?
Well, I don't think you can extend my sentence. There's a new rule in State versus Castillas. It says a good time is applied to mandatory minimum terms differently than it was when I committed a crime in 2003. So,
was that really a new rule, or was that just a statement of what the rule was and that the Department of Corrections wasn't following the rule correctly?
That's how it's been portrayed, but when I was sentenced there, all I understood was I had to do 10 years. And with Castillas, you're saying now I have to do 15 to jam the 20.
You had a mandatory minimum of 10, was your sentence, 10 to 20 with mandatory minimum of 10?
Yes. Okay. So it's a significant change. Very significant.
How long? This is probably not in the record, but you're now under the control of a parole officer?
Yes. I'd like to re-imprison if I violate parole conditions.
Okay. How often do you meet with your parole officer?
Once a month now. And I also wear an ankle bracelet. Yes. Constantly.
So they know where you are right now?
All the time?
Yeah, okay.
She knows I'm on appeal.
So your position is that you served your time and you didn't have any more sentence to serve, and therefore you've been deprived of your civil liberties because of being rearrested and placed on parole.
I believe it's an ex post facto situation, really. I studied some law in prison, worked as a legal aide. Mm-hmm. I'm familiar with Johnson versus Kenney, and after that, Department of Corrections only had a policy that we had to do the mandatory minimum terms. I understood that when I
Then you were eligible for mandatory relief, release, that's your position?
Yeah, it was right after you finish it. Depends on your sentence, you know.
Right.
But I kept all of my good time. I even made it to work release. You know, I work pretty hard to behave myself.
Does the record in front of us today include your original sentencing hearing?
Not the hearing itself, just a... It was never appealed. I never appealed it. The state never appealed. No one ever appealed it, but there is a commitment order.
So we don't know. There's nothing in the record to tell us what the trial judge informed you about the good time and the amount of time you must serve on the sentence. That simply is not in the record.
I had a different sentencing judge than the plea judge pled to burglary and habitual criminal. Well, the judge never said anything, but Even though he didn't say anything, it's the court's position that my minimum sentence controls when I'm eligible for release.
And that statute had not changed from the time before. It was the same statute was in effect throughout the time of your experience with this case, right?
Yes, still the same. Even after Johnson versus Kenney was decided, I thought it might change, but the legislature never said anything else. And until the court said something in the Castillo's case, it looks like you're talking to the district court about sentencing, so that when they announce a sentence, they have some idea of what they're doing to a defendant. And the Department of Corrections didn't. I never saw the case myself. I was still in prison. I worked with these folks. So I was working and not doing legal work.
But under your current sentencing as imposed at present, you will be under the condition of parole for 5 years?
Yes. And the state gave me credit for the 8 months I've been free, saying that there's no way I could have known it.
Yeah, so you have somewhere left of a few years left before you're completely discharged.
2018. And can't believe it happened. It just seems like...
Do you have any difficulty meeting your parole obligations?
No, sir. No.
So you are discharged, but you're still on parole.
Yeah, I'm out of prison, but I'm on parole. I'm subject to violations and being sent back, you know, if something happened, but I don't intend for that.
But your position, you shouldn't have to be under that.
Yes, sir. Department of Corrections didn't even recognize the Castillo's formula until June 13th of 14. I was taken into custody June 30th. But I first heard about it when a reporter contacted me June 20th of 2014.
Do you contend that the ex post facto doctrine applies to actions of the executive department?
Well, yes. In the Shepherd versus Houston case, any subtle thing could affect ex post facto, and it was this court's decision in Castillo's 9.5 years after I committed the crime. That forms the basis for my arrest and my recommitment until 2018.
You've indicated that you, at some point here, become familiar with Johnson v. Kenney, well as Castillo's.
I worked on Johnson versus Kenney when I was a legal aide with Mr. Johnson. So,
do you think those two decisions are consistent?
No, I don't. I think Castillo's departs from the legislature. I think it adds something. It adds more punishment. My punishment is clearly more severe. 8 months after I was released, back in prison, you know, it's very shocking.
So if they would have computed your time correctly, would you still be on parole at this stage?
If my time would have been computed according to Castillo's,
yeah,
at an earlier date, I would probably still be in prison. I've never been on parole.
Okay.
I've done almost 28 years.
I guess what I'm getting at, why isn't this moot? What relief can we give you?
You can release me. You can
discharge you from your parole obligation is what you're arguing.
Yes, I'd like to be to have my October 23rd, 2013 discharge reinstated, and you know, I'll be free again. I'm not free. I have this thing on my ankle all the time. Have to charge it every day. I like my parole officer, so I don't mind talking to her. You know, I'm not supposed to leave the county, but I can, and if I'm working, you know, it's very difficult. I have kids in Phoenix. I just found them.
Mr. Canton, you're now out of time, so appreciate your argument. And
thank you.
Thank you.
You may proceed. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, George Love on behalf of the appellee in this matter. I think the district court's order covers the issues that were raised on appeal, and I realize that under the basic standard of review, since this is fairly novel, probably clearly erroneous on the facts and de novo on the law. I did raise in the brief, and I realized it was never brought up below, but as I was researching to write this brief, I came across the idea that perhaps it's not substantive due process that applies, but the Fourth Amendment, and I just wanted to point that out to the Court, since it is de novo on the law whether the Court wants to decide that there's a, excuse me, a substantive due process issue here, or if it's more appropriately in the Fourth Amendment context of a...
Well, the question is whether or not this rearrest poses an additional penalty that wasn't or shouldn't have been imposed upon the defendant.
The answer is no. The only way to ordinarily to satisfy a judgment is to give effect to the sentence. Now, he was sentenced in 2004 as a habitual criminal. He was sentenced 10 to 20 years. And it has always been the law that good time does not apply to the mandatory minimum. The Department of Corrections interpreted that wrongly and erroneously released Mr. Canton early.
What did they... Did they give him a discharge paper? What did they give him?
They discharged him. That's correct. It's our position that the sentence was never effectuated as pronounced.
So the discharge was void ab initio?
Correct. So there is really no ex post facto application in this context.
What is the effect of the department's policy or their interpretation, even though it was erroneous? What effect does that
None
have?
None on the sentence.
What about on the expectation of the prisoner?
The sentence is valid. He's satisfied the judgment. You execute the sentence. I'm sorry he got his feelings hurt, and he lost his liberty, but he didn't lose his legal liberty. He had no right to that liberty in the first place. Give effect to the sentence.
And we don't have in the record what advisement was given at the time of sentencing about good time and its application, and it may well be, but we just don't have it in the record, that he was told exactly what should happen.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I think this court, although I say probably fairly recently, has held that if the good time advisement isn't objected to, or is erroneous, that the Department of Corrections will correct their records accordingly. In other words, it's basically harmless error anyway, even if he was advised incorrectly as to the to his good time application and mandatory discharge date. So, Your Honor, I really don't have a whole lot more to say than what I said in brief. I think lower court's decision on, excuse me, addressing the substantive due process issue is a correct application of due process.
Did and the Department only, of Corrections even have to go to the district court to rearrest him? Couldn't they have just then done that on their own?
Your Honor, I'm loath to say yes to that, and here's why. I think even if you look at the Fourth Amendment analysis with an affidavit go to the magistrate, ask for an arrest warrant or a search warrant, that even though that's ex parte, the court is aware. There's been an independent body looked at the substance of the matter and said...
By reason of the sentence, they're entitled to custody of him.
Correct.
For that period of time.
Yes.
And can you look at this as though the district court is just helping the department to enforce that right?
Yes, that's exactly what's going on here, Your Honor. And I think on behalf of the executive, in other words, the Department of Corrections, that was the wise thing to do, was to go to the court, an independent body, to look at the problem.
Sort of a CYA.
In a sense, yes, Your Honor, but it also affords at least some process to the person being arrested, in the sense, at least it's been reviewed by an independent court, not an arbitrary decision by the director. And I'm not so certain that the director has that kind of arrest powers. I know they certainly can extradite, for example, on a parole person who's in another state and violates conditions. They can do that sort of thing on their own. But I'm not so certain that they have, quote, arrest powers. I would have to look at that a little closer. But so I think the prudent thing to do is to put the mistake out, show the court what happened, show the validity, et cetera, et cetera. At least then you have a judicial review of the process before anything starts. Because if the probable cause isn't established, for example, in the affidavit to rearrest him, it's going to die there, unless the state, of course, would appeal that judgment. But at least then the arrestee or person to be arrested is afforded some process. And it's no different than in a criminal proceeding. There's no proceeding, there's no requirement under the Due Process Clause to have a hearing before you issue an arrest warrant whether you're going to arrest someone.
One last point. You would agree that the writ of habeas corpus is the appropriate remedy in this case, or at least the appropriate means to seek a remedy?
The answer is yes, because Mr. Catton, in substance, is claiming that his sentence is done. In other words, I'm being held illegally and without reason. So I think that habeas corpus would apply to that justification, because if he had, in fact, served his entire complete sentence, then the Department of Corrections would be unlawfully holding him, and that is the whole point of habeas corpus.
And being on parole constitutes being in custody.
Yes, it does. It does. It does for purposes of post-conviction relief and just about every other aspect of law, Your Honor, that parole is custody. In other words, it doesn't render it moot because he is on parole and he still is subject to the jurisdiction of the Department of Corrections if he violates his parole or whatever. So, and then he can be jerked back and put in prison again. So, I do think it applies. I think that's the vehicle. And that's kind of the difficulty with the Fourth Amendment analysis, I guess. I'm not sure the vehicle you would use, but I just wanted to point it out to the court.
If an individual were to appeal directly from the order itself on the arrest hearing, would that be another appropriate path?
I don't know that that would be a final appealable order. In other words, I think you would have to have some dispositional hearing. In other words, whether it be summary judgment, a motion to dismiss, some final order disposing of the matter. In other words, I don't think you arrested me wrongfully on this affidavit would make the record for appellate review. Because, for example, on a motion for summary judgment, what we did here is we obviously went behind the face of the pleadings and put in evidence to support the reason we had him rearrested. So I don't think just the affidavit for arrest and the warrant itself would be that would be an appealable order. No, not final. If there are no further questions, then we would ask that you affirm the district court. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes the arguments for this morning. The parties are excused, and we are adjourned.